Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And we have the pleasant task of discussing the offense from the Week 3 win over the Cowboys. Here to do that with me is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Kent. I'm doing great. Love to see the Ravens get that win. Much needed. And looking forward to having a conversation about it.
Yeah, it's a whole different feeling going through a week like this. And we've finished, first of all, you know, you still got a little pep in your step after doing all the analysis for basically about 36 hours after the game. And then I'm ready to watch the game again now, like from start to finish, just enjoy it and have it on and, do a puzzle or something while I'm watching it and whatnot. But it's great stuff. It's just a different feeling to be at this point. The last couple of games after I finished analyzing them, I have no interest in watching them another time unless I need to look for something specifically.
Yeah, you know, it's fun. You kind of go back and see what they did well, what can they build on, and hope that they, you know, are able to, you know, self-scout, self-analyze, and take the good stuff and keep moving it forward and kind of weed out the things that aren't quite working as well and really come up with a good game plan for the next week.
So I'm going to compare this to one other game in Ravens history and see if the feeling isn't like similar between us or why it might be different. But if you look back at the second game of 2003, Ravens had a rookie quarterback in there. So different situation from that perspective. They came home to face the Browns after losing at the Steelers fairly handily. I think about 34-7 in the opener or thereabouts. And then they beat the Browns at home on Jamal Lewis's 295-yard game. And if ever there was a team that established an identity for themselves, that was it. It was a big bruising offensive line, not a great pass blocking line, really good run blocking line, not dissimilar. Benny Anderson, kind of a big thug at right guard, who was a guy who could help the team there. And they had Orlando Brown, of course, is on that team. So you got a big right tackle as well. And you look at this team now. They've gone 2 weeks and they've gone toe to toe with a couple of teams. They obviously led the Raiders. They were coming back against the Chiefs and nearly got it done. But then they didn't win either of those games. They go into the third game and they rush the ball incredibly effectively. Don't even have to pass the ball at all, really, in this game. And just ran all over the Cowboys. Do you think this establishes a run identity for this team, or do you think it's just one of several possible offensive identities that they can draw upon?
I think it's the latter. I think it's probably a bit of a matchup situation here. Mm-hmm. You know, they saw the Cowboys kind of get run all over the previous week. They don't necessarily have the big defensive linebackers that are traditionally run stoppers. You know, their defense is willing to kind of let a team run on them in order to try and take away the pass. They like to get after the quarterback in terms of their pass rush. And I think, you know, the Ravens saw that as a weakness and really went out to attack it. And they attacked it in a few different ways, you know, mm-hmm. not just your traditional running play, but we saw, I think, more of like the option, the read from Lamar in this game. And I think that actually helped just kind of set the tone for the game from the beginning. It was going to put, you know, their defense in a bind from the first play of the game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this clearly was a great matchup game for them to have a Cowboys team that really had nothing on the defensive line. Mozzie Smith was hurt for most of the week. He wears number 58 like Michael Pierce. He looks a lot like Michael Pierce too in terms of what he does on a football field. But a really big. Big win for this offensive line. Did not necessarily score as great as people are going to hope. We'll get to that in the second episode. But they were effective, and they were able to move bodies, make blocks in level two, open lanes in the run game, and Henry and Lamar both benefited from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think we saw that wear down over time too. I know the Cowboys kind of by the fourth quarter were able to kind of dedicate more resources to trying to stop the run, but. It really took, you know, a while for them to actually get to that point. And at that point, the Ravens were just kind of like, we're just going to run every single play. Like they were just trying to, milk the clock at that point. So for better or worse. But when they were more in a neutral kind of position or for both sides, when there was more of an opportunity for the Ravens to kind of be a little bit less predictable in terms of what they were doing. I think they did a good job of keeping the Cowboys off balance.
Now, one of the things we just talked about at the production meeting was I've been going out and looking at Odds Checker, particularly after the Ravens won, after the 0-2 start. Even after the 0-2 start, they were still the favorites to win the North. You come after this game, Ravens win, Bengals lose. Now they're up to about a 43% implied probability. Let me bring that up here because this is interesting. We got magic number stuff going on. We got this. Yeah, the Ravens are 45.5% to win the North right now. 43.7 if you take the VIG out. 19.2 for Cincinnati, 29.6 for Pittsburgh, and 7.4% for Cleveland. First of all, do you lean anyway on those four numbers? Any of those numbers seem too high or too low to you?
I think it's really too early to know. I do think that the Ravens are the best team in the division. I think they've, even though they don't have the wins, they've been, I think on a play-by-play basis, you know, definitely the best team. I think, you know, the team I would still consider to be the second best team would be the Bengals, even though they're 0-3. So to that extent, yeah, I think it's hard to kind of parse that with a 3-0 Steelers team that's looking like especially dominant on defense. So I think we just need a little bit more information about where these teams actually stand.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's fair. It's always fine to say we need more information, but the other thing is gambling is all done with current information. And as soon as somebody else has the information too, then the odds change. So you've got to deal with the information you have. One of the things about this Ravens team, they still show up extremely well in DeVoa right now on the offense and defensive side in particular, doing extremely well. Special teams they're lagging in DeVoa, and you can see in this game it's a bad special teams game. But the big thing that has hurt them are the penalties. They had a 6-0 disadvantage in first down by penalty in this game. Some of it legitimate. Some of it not. And, particularly some of the defensive fouls probably were ticky-tack in terms of what happened. That was probably true against the Raiders as well. In particular, the one DPI in the end zone by Stevens was derided by the on-air official. The penalty's been an incredibly frustrating thing. And John Harbaugh had a press conference to talk about it. And I think this is a really good Harbaugh moment, and people need to like take it for what it is. But Harbaugh clearly had crafted a message very carefully, I thought, about the penalties. Did you happen to hear the press conference?
I didn't listen to the whole thing. I saw kind of like the post-it note version of it. But it seemed like it was he wanted to kind of put his team out there and defend his team, but also. At the same time, show some criticism of what was happening. It was very politically stated, I believe.
Yeah, very, very politically stated. It's passive aggressive is how I would describe it in terms of he's basically saying, oh, I'm probably not smart enough to figure out the rule. Anybody who starts their sentence with that, they're plenty smart enough to know. Plus, the Ravens have lots of smart people in that building, even if Harbaugh is legitimately not smart enough, which he is, to interpret the rule and say, that's not what the rule says. The rule says, you know, on that intentional grounding in the end zone, you have to have an eligible receiver nearby. It doesn't say anything about the ball landing or being caught or any of this crapola. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with the proximity of an originally eligible receiver. So they really blew that call. Pereira said as much on air on the broadcast, which I thought was good. And Harbaugh is really taking the high road in two ways. And this is why I love this message so much. The first was that he's telling his players, he's telling the league, hey, look, give us an explanation for this, because this doesn't, what I was told doesn't make any fucking sense. Yep. Tolbert came up with an explanation. This is what we're told. It's complete crap. He didn't say that, but he implied it completely by the, it doesn't make sense that they'd be rewarded kind of comment. Maybe there's a loophole. Maybe there's something I don't understand about this that needs to be cleaned up and clarified. It's none of that. He knows that the explanation was crap and the league needs to address that. It won't ever be called that way again. So in fact, somebody else found a clip of a previous play where it had been called correctly. I don't know if you saw, it was Sanchez actually got tackled for or was about to be tackled in the end zone, pitches the ball out of lineman, catches it. I mean, it's identical. The situation is identical. It was ruled a safety. So and by the way, if the reason was the ball was over the line, tell them that then. Tolbert should have said that. That should have been the first words out of Tolbert's mouth. Sorry, could have been a safety, but the ball's out over the line. Yeah. Don't come back with that explanation now. Don't tell us, it was caught by a lineman, so it's a completion and blah, 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 blah. It can only be an illegal touch. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I do want to say I thought it was extremely diplomatically done, and it clearly had the hands of expert word crafters. They had internal meetings to decide how they would present this at the press conference. And they may have even teed up the question to one of the media members. I know there's certain media members, and Jeff is Zurebeck is among them, who have some preferential treatment. Not in a bad way at all. Do I mean this, by the way? Have some preferential treatment in terms of learning about injuries and whatnot. And they're used as a conduit often. But in return, they may also offer up a question of Harbaugh's design back so they can give a particular response. I don't know if this happened in this particular case, by the way. And it probably didn't need to, because the question was going to come up in any case. I don't want to ramble on. I want to give you a chance, but I then also want to tell the second part of this, which is really, really liked about what he said about the penalties and his players.
Well, I'll let you talk about that, I think, first. But my overall comments and questions are, this isn't a one-week thing. You know, mm-hmm. The Ravens seem like they have been aggressively penalized for 3 weeks now, you know, dating back to the Ronnie Stanley penalties in week one. You know, last week it was that awful non-face mask on Nnamdi Amadebike, as well as, you know, the questionable defensive pass interference, which you mentioned. I think there were a couple of other kind of phantom calls in that game as well. This game, you know, obviously this was a penalty that should have gone a different way against the opponent. And then, you know, there was a hands to the face penalty on Voorhees where he wasn't touching the face at all. He might have been called a hold if he wanted to, but the replay was like, okay, there's no face mask touching there. Like, this is a consistent theme of plays that are going against the Ravens, and the opponent is among the least, like, whoever they're playing is basically like the least penalized team in the league. It's a massive discrepancy, and it's kind of hard to parse why exactly that's happening.
Yeah, and then of course the roughing the passer penalty on Owe, I thought was absurd. You know, it's another one. But they lead the NFL in net penalty yards by a wide margin. And Harbaugh also, he said the right thing also. And this goes back to John Simpson last year. Simpson came from Oakland, had a lot of excuses, no doubt, about his own penalty problems coming from there. Bad system, bad scheme, bad, bad, bad. It was somebody else's problem. Harbaugh can't come out and lash out against the league about what's going on. So he said exactly the correct diplomatic thing, which is basically, hey, look, we've got a ton of penalties. We've got to clean that up. And there's a few of them we're going to send to the league, and we're just going to say, explain to us why this is a penalty. Okay. And there's the rest of them. We need to aggressively try and clean that up. And it's going to be a point of emphasis this week. I'm paraphrasing, but that's effectively what he said. And I think that's very important, because it becomes, you know, if you project that problem onto the officials, then it gives the players an out to project it off themselves. And so you need to maintain both, and they need to be very careful about how that message is crafted. Now, of course, they get to coach those players, but you also don't want the players even talking among themselves and saying, well, look, John's going in the meeting, he's saying one thing and he's telling us a different thing on the field. It doesn't make any sense. Both can be true. The Ravens are getting penalized too much because you know, for whatever reason, they're getting penalized too much. But they're also are having penalties that are too much because they're not being careful themselves. And that's they're the worst team in the NFL in net penalty yards by a wide margin. Some of that is penalties on them, and some of them is penalties not being called.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think obviously the Ravens do need to clean things up. Like, there are penalties that they have been called for, which they've deserved. And that's something that they can work on. It's something that I think the Ravens have been pretty good on, actually, in the past few years. Historically, there was a bit of time where they were a very heavily penalized team, and then I think they tried to clean that up. Especially, I think, penalties in the secondary, they were very aggressive in saying, we're going to be trying to avoid, holding and illegal contacts and those types of penalties.
Yep.
And they've had turnover and personnel, they have turnover in staff. So some of those things may have kind of slid under the radar a little bit. But there are things that can be improved there for sure. And I'm curious about, next week and seeing if the NFL kind of reacts to this in any way. Do the Ravens get penalized the same way? Or are they going to be looked at in the same kind of lens in terms of getting, double-digit penalties? Or is the NFL going to kind of swing the other way? Because sometimes
what would be your bet?
I would actually lean the other direction. I think the Ravens might get a good game from a refereeing standpoint. That would be my lean in this one. And I don't know why. I think possibly because they're a 1-2 team going against a 3-0 team, and the NFL loves drama, and they want to give the 1-2 team, with the reigning MVP a little bit of an advantage. I do think there is some of that in some of the as well. NFL would never admit to that type of thing, but I do think there is a little bit of a weighting that they put in how they choose their referees and how they go forward with kind of emphasizing certain things and how the game is going to be called. It is a home game for the Ravens. It is a primetime game for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. So I think all those things add up to maybe them getting a few breaks, but obviously we'll have to wait and see, but that's what I might expect to have, Evan.
I'm going to go one further, is that I agree with you. First of all, I think that's the direction it would probably occur, not necessarily for the same reasons. Harbaugh is magnificent. No matter what you think of Harbaugh, and there's a lot of Harbaugh whining going on, as with every two-game losing streak for your team, it's always the coach's fault because he's the easiest guy to blame. But Harbaugh is magnificent at getting his teams ready to play games at odd times, but in particular, in prime time at home, the Ravens are almost undefeatable in the Harbaugh era. And they've won, I forget if it's like 19 out of 21 or something. It's of that order of magnitude they've won of their last primetime games. And they've really asked the schedule makers to give them more primetime games at home. They had a long run where they're playing the Steelers every year on the road and whatnot. And they hated that because obviously you want to play to your own strength. But at the heart of that is how Harbaugh organizes this team to be ready for a game, in terms of how you set up meetings going into it, all of the things that go into playing at a non-standard time. And you see West Coast teams coming to the East Coast having all kinds of trouble with that. They're not necessarily good with it. Well, Harbaugh can play games on the West Coast. He can come back home. We can play him on 6 days. We can play him on 8 days. He's just been remarkably good. They didn't even take their bye after London last year, which is very unusual and a great testament to not letting the team scatter around Europe like cats and then have to reherd them back to practice, a few days later. It's one of the real strengths of the Harbaugh era is how he's prepared his teams to be ready for those non-standard times.
Yeah, and I know that they do meet with officials before the game, so we'll see if they're kind of zoned in on certain things that they're going to try to specifically avoid in terms of getting penalties in those areas. So obviously both teams get the opportunity to talk to the referees and understand like what they're looking for. But I agree, Harbaugh. If one thing you I think you you can't thank him for is how he prepares a team. And they're always ready to play. Sometimes the game plan isn't the best in terms of strategy on the field, but the players are always ready to go. And there's never like a look of them being, unready for what's happening or not looking like they showed up to the game. That's just not something that's happened as Harbaugh has been the head coach.
Right. What's your take on the very frustrating quarter four we saw?
I think it was a little bit of a bad sequence of events that happened. Obviously, missed field goal that normally you would expect to make, short field for the opposing offense, special teams blunder. Mm-hmm. Normally, it's a 5% chance of happening in today's NFL. It's extremely rare for an onside kick to be recovered. That I think another short field, it was just sequence. I think the defense probably got a little tired there, after having to kind of be on the field for, I guess, kind of three drives in a row. And it's always a little bit hard when you're the team that has a several score lead because you don't want to play too aggressively. You don't want to play also too conservatively. You're trying to strike that balance, but it allows the other team to get back in it, especially when they're playing four down football. So it's hard to kind of be back on your heels in those situations.
This is one thing they asked me on the radio this morning, basically that exact question, but why do we keep blowing fourth quarter leads? Well, because the rules of football make it the balance of strategies, is true in most sports, by the way. This is true in college basketball, in baseball, it's true. It's probably less true in baseball than anything else, but it's true there too, is the balance of strategies favors the trailing team. And you just mentioned one of them is the option to play four down football. When you don't care how many points you lose by, you can give up expected points to get expected win probability. You can give up expected turnovers to have additional expected yards by throwing the ball deep. So you have a whole set of strategies that accrue to the trailing team. And honestly, with four down football being so dominant in terms of how it's played, it's something you always need to be concerned about is, do I really want a 1-point lead with 45 seconds to play, or would I rather have no lead at all? Would I rather be tied? That's, the decision to go for two or one to tie or win a game at a point like that. Just forcing the other team to play three down football is a major consideration now.
Yeah. And I also think, there were some penalties there too. Mm-hmm. We talked about those. There was kind of like a little bit of a phantom illegal contact. There was the roughing the passer that you mentioned to kind of extend drives. So it was, I think, more so just kind of like random unluckiness on the far end of the variability scale. A little bit of, issue, especially with special teams. I think I'll say even more than a little bit. That was definitely an issue, the special teams component of that. Yeah. I don't think it was necessarily much of an offensive problem. They were still able to. Yeah, 1-3 and out is, I don't think, is a terrible disaster of a fourth quarter from an offensive perspective. And they were able to obviously put the game away when they needed to. So that to me wasn't quite as concerning. I think it was more of, defense getting a little bit worn out and the special teams putting them in situation where they probably were not expecting to be in.
Yep. And I'm with you exactly. I think you hit on all the important points there. Ravens outplayed Dallas on both sides of the ball, not considering special teams, but defense and offense, they outplayed them. I think a fair statement.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. By wide margin, I would say.
Yeah. They didn't. I mean, it's not like Dallas had a bad game throwing the football. They were reasonably effective, but a lot of it was accomplished against some soft prevent defense, some soft zones where part of what the Ravens are trying to do. Brandon Stevens had a really good game this way, was making tackles with no yak in bounds. And when you're trying to give away an 8-yard play in bounds, when that's an objective, then you have you're going to give up some relative yardage at a higher level. Also, one of the big problems this game, I thought, was Nate Wiggins had a really terrible game, which is very unfortunate from a number of perspectives. But to give up the points at the end of the half was bad, and to hit for the cycle of defensive coverage fouls in one game that's really bad.
Yeah, he definitely had a very poor game. And, I have to think some of that might be coming back from, missing a week, recovering from the car crash. He didn't I think he had a limited practice throughout the week. He might have practiced once fully at the end of the on Friday, but he wasn't his self, the person we've seen in the first week or in the preseason. And he's a rookie, that too has to be remembered. You know, he was going against not always the best competition in terms of the wide receivers, but he just looked like he was a little slow. Like he was taking bad steps, not quite having the recovery that we've seen from him, you know, in the off season. And I think he didn't get a chance to really flash the speed and the length that the reason why the Ravens drafted him. I think the reason why he has so much upside, he seemed like he was just kind of like a step behind in this game. So I wouldn't expect him to play that poorly in most games, I would hope.
Right. They really did focus on him. They threw some at Stevens too, because Stevens had been very good the first two games. Stevens was outstanding in this third game. But I thought pretty much everybody else who played corner, Stevens, Humphrey, and Ardarius Washington were simply outstanding in this game. So it really, despite the fact they had a big passing game, it was pretty much all on Wiggins, a couple misplays at safety from Marcus Williams. But it was pretty much all on Wiggins when you really get right down to it. Oh, and there were a couple throws between level two and level three that you could ascribe to either Roquan or a safety that I don't want to really get into too much, but still, one of the things I'm really happy about so far is the Ravens cornerback play.
Yeah. And I know that there's a lot of kind of concern about the Ravens secondary and their, you know, the passing offenses that they've allowed to kind of throw the ball all over them, especially I would say the second half of the Oakland game and the second half of the Cowboys game. I do think both of those have somewhat similar circumstances. You know, the team was trailing and trying to catch up. And I think especially in the Raiders game, it was a lot of just amazing wide receiver play out of Devontae Adams. And sometimes you're just going to get beat Bowers. By one. And Bowers too. Yeah. Bowers played great. Minshew was able to escape pressure a few times and pick up chunk plays out of structure. That's not always going to happen. So, I do think the secondary will, or and maybe not even just the secondary, but the overall pass defense will improve. And I think, you know, the one thing that they did this week, you know, signing Ngakoue, I think they did realize that their defense was kind of getting a little bit worn down in those kind of late third, fourth quarter, you know, drives, and they needed maybe another pass rusher to come out and give them some juice off the edge.
So here's the big ask, and we got to move on after this, but who does Ngakoue replace on game day? So he's going to be coming off the practice squad as an elevation, I assume, for 3 weeks, because they'd be smart to do that, and they usually are smart. So who is he replacing? Because they've already got six outside linebackers they can have active. They've already got one outside linebacker that has been inactive all 3 weeks in Isaac.
I mean, I think it could be game plan dependent, but I think it would probably be Robinson at first, just because if you look at the snaps and what he's contributing, you can probably find that contribution from other players. And I do think someone like Ngakoue will offer more of a pass rush presence, and that's probably what they need more than someone who's a little bit stouter against the run. That would be my expectation.
I don't disagree with you, by the way, and Malik Harrison then becomes increasingly important to the team playing on first down, but I do think that they need more of those early down snaps taken care of by some player who's not one of their big pass rushers. I think, first of all, Ngakoue ain't a run defender at all.
Yeah.
He's not going to help you there at all. Ajabo, I don't believe, is going to help you there at all, although they could try him at that and give him a few more snaps if Robinson were down, because I think that's one of the potential solutions. They could try it with Isaac as well. I don't think that necessarily would work either. I think Isaac is a situational pass rusher, which, you're getting my point here. They have a lot of situational pass rushers at this point.
I don't think Harrison would be left off because of his special teams contributions and his ability to potentially play inside linebacker if they needed him there.
Yeah. And outside linebacker on first down. I mean, he's one of the staple guys for that. So, all right, let's move on. Ravens lost the snap battle 70-60. That really showed up in the fourth quarter when they played 24 out of 27 in a row on the field. And then I think that the big thing that I really hate about this is Brent Urban being deactivated again, which didn't seem like it was going to be a problem again for 49 minutes of football, until it was. in the fourth quarter when they had a bunch of tired defensive linemen. And it's those rotational positions that get hammered most by somebody being inactive.
Yeah, I think it's one of those trade-offs that you have to make sometimes. I don't think they expected this team to be a very run-heavy team, and that's probably why they felt like they could go with only four bodies at defensive tackle. That may change against a team like the Bills, who are much more willing to kind of run the ball at you. I would expect Urban to probably be active, but it's, you know, we'll kind of have to see how that progresses. But I agree, you know, those are the players specifically that get worn out the fastest, and not having an extra person to rotate in there is definitely going to impact your ability to have a lot of plays that you have to run late in games, and it will wear down the defense faster for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going here. So Derrick Henry, we need to obviously talk about him. Dominated the game for much of it, but actually very similarly to the Oakland game, he kind of disappeared in quarter four. Now, I know everybody says, oh, no, just give Henry the rock. Keep doing it 25 times, then quarter, you know, carries 26 to 30, you're going to be great. But the truth of the matter is, when they needed to put away the game in the fourth quarter, Henry couldn't do it, and Lamar had to. And I am not dissing Henry in this way. He did have a nice six-yard run to try and set up that first three-and-out drive that failed, and then he slipped on second down, and he only got 1 yard. And then they had an incomplete pass, which is, you know, it's just the nature of the game. Then they probably should have gone for it, by the way, but they didn't. And they decided to punt the ball 31 yards. While he has been very effective and he's fifth in the NFL in rushing, he hasn't been the kind of closer I don't think that the Ravens could have hoped for.
I think a lot of that has to do with what something I mentioned before, and that was, you know, the obvious nature of what they were trying to do at that point. I think for pretty much that final two drives, the Ravens went very, very heavy. If it wasn't 22 personnel, it was definitely, you know, 21 or something along those lines. It was a lot of heavy looks. And you're basically saying, we're going to line up and we're going to run the ball at you. They didn't do any play action. They did obviously have to pass once or twice to convert some third downs or try to convert third downs. One was incomplete, one was converted. I think that if they had maybe used some of the looks where they had been lining up and had success earlier in the game, where they had, and they were using heavier personnel as well. You know, it was 12 personnel a lot of the time, some 21 personnel, but lining up in less condensed formations, you know, lining up where you have more of a spread look and giving the ball to Henry or showing a zone read and having Lamar keep it. I think if they had ran the ball that way, they would have had more success at the end of the game instead of just lining up in a giant jumbo package and trying to come at you and just win by sheer dominance. I don't know if they have necessarily still the offensive line that can just put that type of movement on the other team.
Just to magnify your point here, you're absolutely on the three and out drive. They had three tight ends, if you include Ricard as a tight end. They had three tight ends in on each of those three plays. So one time Ricard lined up in the backfield among the three, but obviously a very, very heavy looks. And they were very heavy for the game, which I want to come back to a little bit later. In terms of the passing in this game, very much one where the yardage was accumulated after the catch. In fact, Lamar's ADOT for the game was something like 3.4, if I recall correctly. I put it down for the next gen stats, 3.2 yards on this play. But they only threw the ball 15 times for starters, which is fantastic. If you can impose your will on the opponent and show us. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens,
Check out their online dispensary and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
That line like that in a game, you're winning 22-6 and then it gets a lot closer. That's just a marvelous way. I mean, they showed Parsons on the sideline at 28-6 early in the fourth quarter, probably late in the third quarter. He's just shaking his head. He doesn't know what to do about the thing. It was literally the most distraught player image I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, it's when you can get away with that and build a lead by being so successful on the ground, it really kind of disheartens a defense, I think, because nobody wants to just go out there and defend the run for you know, four quarters. I think the Ravens were very smart in how they did run the ball. As I mentioned, they also mixed in a little bit of the passing. They mixed in some play action. They mixed in a lot of those kind of read options. And I think it really kept the Cowboys pretty much off balance the entire time. I mean, there was you can find clips of Micah Parsons looking like he said no clue where he was supposed to be going, and he was diving in to try and like disrupt the running back, and Lamar kept it, and he was, you know, sprinting past him. A lot of this was by design, and I think if they can do that to every team, that's ideal. I don't know if every team is going to be so susceptible to that type of game plan. But it's definitely a great way to not only, you know, run time, but run clock, but also, really just take the will out of the opposing defense. And that's what we saw for much of this game.
Yeah. I love that. The other thing that should shake the will of the opponent is that the Ravens didn't use their primary receivers at all. They Andrews combined for two targets for one reception, 4 yards. They threw a couple times to Flowers, but the three of them combined had 24 yards on 6 targets. So Flowers had, I guess, 20 on 4. He did have that very big conversion on the final drive. So I don't want to minimize Flowers' contribution, but you know, you look at this game and you say they didn't even use their big weapons. Their big weapons, the passing game, they hit Bateman for a touchdown. You know, it's not like Bateman had no yards, but he got very little in terms of yardage. Basically, it was 5 passes to 4 second-tier receivers, which included Kolar on the 30, Aguilar on the 56, 2 passes to Hill that went for good yardage. Hill's been a great player so far this year. Just really enjoyed that. And who got the fourth ball?
I think it was Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry. Yes. Yeah. So I mean that was that was the whole offense of the 182 pass yards. And what I want to, it was 156 of the 182. What I want to come back to is you're Buffalo. Maybe there's some things you can learn about the Ravens game plan wise in terms of trying to defend the run and some of the concepts they're using. I don't know if you're another team, what you draw from this game in terms of the Ravens. Okay, they didn't use their big passing weapons, but can we afford to ignore them?
I mean, it's good to be able to show that kind of dynamism on offense, your ability to do multiple things. I think what they haven't necessarily shown this year is, can they be a team that successfully throws intermediate and deep when they need to? They haven't really had to very much. Maybe you could argue they needed to a little bit in the Chiefs game, and they had a couple of big completions in that game, but for the most part, they've been a team, and you mentioned Lamar's ADOT. He's thrown a lot of short passes. I think probably the shortest he's had in his career this year. in general. It's
in general, actually, I just want to say he was much longer in the first two games, much longer. He was like 8 and 9 yards in those first two games. And that's still not that long. I mean, there's quarterbacks who go longer than that. But the 3.2, it was a sharp division downwards.
Yeah, and for a stretch, you know, last year, I think maybe the year before that, he was in like the 9 to 10 range for a large chunk of the season. And maybe, you know, that kind of just depends on what options you have available to you. But I think that's something that they're going to need to put on film, that they're willing to take those shots. I don't think that you can have a full season where you're just kind of throwing 5 yards down the field. Even if you have good options, if you can't threaten a team defensively, I think it's going to limit to some certain extent what you can do on offense, because defenses will hone in on that. And there's just less space when you're not actually stretching them vertically.
Yeah. Okay. Completely agree with that part, by the way. And it is something that not only do I think that they'll bring the passing game in against the Bills, probably because they have to, but also because that I think we'll see a new wrinkle in the run game. We'll see something. Maybe they'll go to a lot of pistol and run it differently, where Lamar's the side option and not a center option from sidecar. I'm expecting them to have budgeted what they wanted to show new to the Cowboys, thinking, hey, we've got to also look ahead to Buffalo and Cincinnati these next 2 weeks and keep some things under wraps.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a part of what, I mean, they're scheming. They're not looking at, you know, just 1 week. They're looking several weeks in advance. They don't want to give away what they're going to be doing. Obviously the Ravens have weapons. You know, Andrews has really been not used at all. We saw one big game from Likely, but a lot of that was still check down type stuff. They really haven't used them to push the ball vertically. Bateman has really been the guy who's running a lot of their vertical routes for them. Flowers has been more also kind of short to intermediate. So it'll be interesting to see if they start kind of unleashing some more, you know, routes down the middle of the field, stretching the seams, some of the deep routes, deep posts. And it's really probably going to be somewhat dictated by how, you know, defensive coordinators choose to defend them and what types of looks they give them. And if they give them some single high safety looks and they're willing to take some shots deep, I think the Ravens will really succeed from that. So it may just be kind of like a, you know, punch counter punch situation, what teams are showing them and what do they have in their playbook that can attack it.
Yeah, that's what it should be. As long as your offensive coordinator can adapt on the fly and you know, see what's working, and Lamar can too on a play by play basis, trying to figure out reading the defense and figuring out what's going on, then it should be exactly done that way. You know, one thing we didn't see, we thought we'd see a lot of, was play action in this game against the Cowboys. They did lean on the Lamar Henry mesh point in a lot of ways. Both those two were very effective running the ball. Misdirection was terrific, I thought, in this game in terms of both what they did with the line, what they did with jet motion a few times, and what they did with the combination of Lamar and Henry, you know, going in different directions. And you know, it's almost like they're running a great route at the top of the stem. They're making a move to make the defense make a mistake, and Lamar's taking advantage of it, whether he's leaving or taking.
Yeah, I think this was something that we probably could have seen more of in the first 2 weeks. I think it is a little bit of opportunity lost, and not really taking advantage of the personnel they have with Derrick Henry. And to certain, and Justice Hill too. I think one of the things they did well in this game was not kind of telegraph what they were doing with which running back was on the field. You know, they ran a screen to Derrick Henry. They ran some pass plays when Derrick Henry was on the field. They had some 11 personnel of Derrick Henry out there, things like that, which were kind of not seen earlier. They showed, and it really makes both of the running backs more effective. It makes Lamar Jackson more effective too, because yeah, it makes it harder for the defense to know what's coming.
All right. Let's move on and talk a little bit about Lamar and what he did, because he didn't really take this game over as a scrambler. Now, I did notice he had the one play that looked like a busted play, and it was clearly busted by the way he banged on his helmet at the end of the play. By the way, that's the universal signal of I need to come out of the game. Most fans know that, I know, but there's probably a few people who, when they see somebody tap on the top of their helmet, that means I need to come out of the game. I might be hurt or I'm winded. In the case of Lamar, he hit himself on the top of the helmet. It's like, I did something stupid. He's not coming out of the game. So he knew he'd kind of forgotten the play. And all of a sudden, you know, he dropped back. People were not where they were supposed to be. the defense was equally befuddled, which was what was really cool about it. And he had just a lane to run right up the middle. So rarely does that kind of thing occur. But when you've got Lamar Jackson, special things can occur.
Yeah, that was funny to watch, especially because I think, like you said, the defense, you know, they key on what players around them are doing. When they see the quarterback doing like a, I think it was a kind of a fake pitch, but there was nobody there because the running back, I think it was Justice Hill, had already left on a route. And Lamar's just standing there, but the line is getting a push. So the defenders are kind of scrambling in different directions. He had his giant lane open up right in front of him when, and he just had the, you know, the heads up ability to say, okay, you're going to give me this running lane. I'm going to go take 8 yards. So it was definitely him willing to improvise and make the right decision there. But yeah, it was funny just to see how that all unfolded.
He got outrushed by Henry 25-14 in this game. If I had to guess, I'd say they'd even like the running backs have a bigger ratio of runs from the total of running backs to Lamar than 25-14. So you can throw in, I think he'll rush the ball how many times? 3 or 4 times, maybe two to four times. 27-14, 2-1, they probably want a higher ratio than that. They do want to use the read option, but my guess is they'd probably like Lamar to run, what, maybe 9 times a game, 10 times a game?
Yeah, I think the sweet spot is probably 8 to 10 times, just to kind of limit the total number of chances he has to get, you know, injured. Mm-hmm. I think that you also always have to consider, you know, scrambles versus designed runs, because I think like week 1 was a lot of scrambles when the Chiefs were kind of just like allowing him to take that. And that's just, you know, him being ultra competitive and wanting to like take what the defense was giving him. Last week there was almost none against Oakland. And I think there just needs to be that right balance, because it really does have a huge impact on the way teams are going to defend you if you show that threat of running the ball. I think this game they intentionally put that in there as a way to kind of negate the impact of Micah Parsons after the way, you know, Max Crosby kind of blew up their offense in a lot of ways the week before. If they can do that against defenses, especially that have like a premier edge rusher, I think it'll be very beneficial to their success.
So when they had only the Ravens only had 15 pass plays in this game, so that obviously limits the total data points you have for pass rush. But the Cowboys rushed 4 or 5 on every pass play, and it is kind of difficult. It does force to your point. It changes how you can defend, because you don't always know the pass is coming, even on 3rd and 5. And we saw that in this game. They had a couple of rush attempts, I believe, on 3rd and 5+. But the Cowboys are in a position where you really are not well served to rush 6 or, you know, some kind of all out 7-man rush when you don't know what Lamar is going to try and do. You don't know if his play is really teed up for a hot read, and you also don't know if they're going to run the football. So can you drop 3, play a spy like the Chiefs did at the end of the at the game? Well, maybe, and that has its own other risks. I just thought it was great that the Ravens were really limiting the Cowboys' rush in terms of what they did at the line of scrimmage. Now, I'm guessing the Dallas Cowboys want to be able to rush you with 4 anyway and do it effectively. They didn't do it in this game.
Yeah, if you can negate the 4-man rush either by having an amazing offensive line or by having a great, you know, schematic advantage, you're going to be in a good position to win football games. Like, I mean, if a team cannot get to the quarterback without rushing 5, 6, it's a problem. And I know that there has been criticism against the Ravens and against Lamar Jackson that when teams kind of bring extra heat, especially, you know, the 6+, I think, rushes where there's immediate kind of pressure. It's been kind of an issue for him in the past, trying to either make something happen or not having enough time to, you know, access the hot route or whatever it may be. But I think in this game, you know, he was able to handle pressure well. There was, you mentioned no sacks. I think even though they didn't have a lot of dropbacks, it still indicates the fact that there may be something that they can build on in terms of finding ways to kind of negate that pass rush. We saw back-to-back screenplays in this game that were run well. I don't know the last time the Ravens did back-to-back screenplays ever, especially successful screenplays. So that was really nice to see. That's another way that you can encounter a pass rush, and especially an aggressive pass rush. So I think there are options in that playbook for them to find ways in order to continue to keep the defense off balance.
On the Henry screen pass in particular, the PL-23, I think that was Henry and not Hill, but it might have been Hill. Doesn't matter. It's the first play I can recall scoring in years. It's been so many years, I couldn't tell you who the last guys to do it were, where three Ravens linemen all had a successful downfield block. And you watch the Chiefs and other teams that really screen the ball a lot, and their guys are always out front of the play. They know, they keep their feet, they did really well with that. You know, for all of the great things that Jordalis Yandros was, he really was not really adept at screen blocking technique, or his players did not give evidence of that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a Joe D thing or if it's an offensive coordinator thing. I think we've seen a little bit of an uptick in screen percentage under Todd Monken. A lot of that has been wide receiver type screens, which I'm not the biggest fan of. But the screens to the running backs so far this season have been successful, and I'd like to see more of it. And I think they have, obviously shown that they're willing to do it, and it's a great tool to have available to you, especially against an aggressive defense.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about how Lamar did with his opportunity set. So he had only four ample time and space opportunities the whole game. That's 27%. That's actually about normal for the league today. 4-4 complete for 63 yards, 15.8 yards per play. You obviously will take that. 6 ball out quick times. A lot of people say that the offense was all ball out quick in this game. It's really not true. They had some time, they had some pressures, but they had 6 ball out quick, so 40% of it. He was 5 of 6 for 103 on those plays. So those included obviously some of the big ones, including, I believe, the 56-yard play was in that group. I just have needed to look for a second. Yeah, the 56-yard play was the first of the ball out quick opportunities. And then he had 5 on which he was pressured. First of all, if you get pressured only 5 times all game, it means you're dominating in the run game, because you're obviously the other team is not getting home at all, getting in the cone at all. And he was 3 of 5 for 16 yards on those plays. It's right around average, about a yard less than what you could normally expect. What I want to talk about here is how I get expected yards out of this, and just take a sidelight onto this, because I have a very simple spreadsheet approach. I put in 4 ATS opportunities with an expectation of 8.5 yards per play on those. I put in 6 ball out quick opportunities with an expectation of 6 yards per play on those. And I put in 5 pressures with an expectation of 3.5 yards per play on those. So it's 2.5 yards up at each level. I get 87.5 yards of expected passing from Lamar Jackson in this game, and he actually threw for 182. It's one of the best outperformances of expectation I've seen from a Ravens quarterback in a long time. I think he did something similar in the Detroit game last year, where he had a bunch of pressure throws that went for a lot of yardage.
Yeah, I think part of that, as you mentioned, was the yard after catch. Obviously, the Aguilar play was a lot of kind of the wide receiver making a great play and having the opportunity to have open field in front of him. I'm not going to take the credit completely away from Lamar Jackson, because he made the correct read. He was under pressure, was blitz, and he identified where it was coming from and who he needed to throw the ball to. He made an accurate pass on time, and that allowed Aguilar to make, one quick juke and make that play. So, I mean, it was both of them, being very successful in that sense. And then, some of the other ones, we talked about the screens already. It's just a well-designed and also well executed. It's not always easy to execute a screenplay. We've seen them try a few times and they've had the ball batted. They've had to ground the ball for whatever reason. But in this game, it seemed like it all came out, well. So it's definitely a matter of execution. I think that lends to go into that. And it was executed on the high end in pretty much every single one of these opportunities. And that's ideally what you're going to have in a kind of game like this, where you needed the win. You need to kind of be locked in and focused and making sure that you're, buttoning up on all the details.
Yeah. And I don't want to get too much of the small sample size, but the fact that Aguilar broke that tackle was with a lot of extra yards, and it might've been half of the incremental total because it was a 56-yard play. I don't remember whether it was, you know, 8, 10 yards, whatever they caught the ball at, but he broke a tackle right there and went down and almost scored. Yeah. From that spot. So there's some small sample size stuff. And given the fact Lamar's ADOT was only 3.2, I don't think it's reasonable to give all the credit to Lamar, but it's reasonable to give the credit to the Ravens offense as a whole. You know, they're the missed tackles they forced on the plays, the, you know, the quality of the blocks downfield. And as you mentioned, the schemes, I think that's all fair. It's interesting. He's still, despite having the game he had, he's 1.8% below his expected completion percentage for the game. Do you notice that? It was like 80% completion percentage, and he should have been 82.
I guess because of the nature of a lot of the pass plays, you know, they weren't throwing it into contested catch situations or down the field. Shorter passes generally should have a higher expectation for completion.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely it. Let's talk a little bit about some other scheme elements. We had Henry seeing 37 snaps, Hill 26. Collier was active for this game. You'd never know it unless you're watching special teams closely, where he probably got a snap or two. But the third running back has not played a single snap so far for the Ravens this year.
I don't think they've needed it offensively. They have a really nice combination between Hill and Henry. I think you mentioned Hill. He's played really well this year, both in the passing game. Obviously, he's shown a really nice ability to pass protect as well. But he's been a successful runner. He's had a couple of really nice plays called back by penalty as well. Mm-hmm. And he's been someone who adds a different element to what they can do. You know, short area burst. He doesn't have the long speed probably of Henry, although he does have speed in the open field. And I think they both have really added quite a dynamic element in what this running game can be. And, you know, who knows if we'll see Keaton Mitchell join into that group, but I think Hill has really kind of taken on a lot of what Mitchell was able to flash as a rookie last year. And then some in terms of his contribution in the passing game.
I agree completely. And I wanted to fold this into a Mitchell question for you, because it does look like Mitchell will be back at some point this season based on, you know, tweets we're seeing and whatnot. Can't go too much by player tweets, but once he says, you know, it's great to see 20 miles per hour again, he might be exaggerating slightly, but I don't think he's exaggerating by a lot, because I think that would be very counterproductive if he said to the Ravens, I'm more ready than I am, and came back. And we just saw what happened with J.K. Dobbins in that, what, 3 years ago or whenever it was, and when he really was not ready to return. But in the case of Mitchell, a lot of the gadget burden has gone to Flowers. They've got a full backfield for now, and that could change in an instant. Obviously, they could be shorter running back at any moment, you know, if they with what happens. But if Mitchell returns under the current circumstances, and let's say he's 85 or 90% of who he was before, so I think that's probably the upper end. I don't think he'll be 100% of who he is probably ever again, would be my guess. But if he's 85 or 90% of the player he was before, do you use him in more of a flanker gadget role, where you're really replacing a wide receiver or not using a tight end and using him in a pony situation, a two-man backfield, using him for misdirection that you're currently depending on Flowers for, to then extract more value out of Flowers from his routes down the field?
I think that's probably the optimal way to use him, especially because he is so explosive in the open field. Flowers obviously can do a lot of those things as well, short area burst, quickness, stop start, acceleration, things like that. And Justice Hill, you know, to a certain extent, has that in his game as well. But Mitchell definitely showed to have that in a really unique way. Just the ability to accelerate 0 to 60 in, you know, a blink of an eye. And if he really is able to kind of continue to look in a similar way when he is healthy and able to come back, I think you can't completely rule out, you know, what he can do out of the backfield, but I do think you want to get him the ball, and you want to get him the ball in opportunities to allow him to show off that speed and get him those abilities to get into open space a little bit easier potentially than just, you know, running between the tackles. Not that he wasn't successful in that, but you have two other backs who can take on that workload. You don't necessarily have to give him that ball. I think you can use him in a lot of different ways. So the gadget type role, some screenplays, you know, some jet sweeps, things like that, I think he can be extremely effective.
Yeah, I would absolutely just love to see it. I think if you make him your short area guy, it unlocks so much more for this team in terms of what you do, so much more in terms of impactful misdirection too, where you can make full use of who Flowers is. One thing to like in this game. Okay, let's stick with the heavies, because this was really one thing I want to make sure we got to. They used 2.15 heavies per game. And obviously, this was a case where they really wanted a point of attack offense versus Dallas, who's on the small side and didn't have a big rotation of guys to go to in terms of their heavies. It's really nice to have as big a snap advantage as they had for three quarters or for 50 minutes against the Cowboys, and be able to lean on them in the way the Ravens did. Really shows you know, the Cowboys were getting the butt end of that rifle before the Ravens started getting it due to this two special teams mistakes. But they use 2.15 heavies per play, which is that's a combination, again, of tight ends, fullbacks, and OL6s. The first two games of the year, they used only 1.74 versus the Chiefs and 1.62 versus the Raiders. And the other point I make with regard to this is they did it basically by only giving Andrews a 33% snap share. So it was basically likely Kolar and Ricard eating up most of those snaps. That was most of the 2.15.
It was surprising. Surprising to see Andrews given such a small share in this game. With the number of available options the Ravens have, I think it was natural to see his kind of percentage of targets, percentage of routes run, percentage of snaps come down. But I think to have it fall to this extent is definitely outside of what most expectations were. Is it something due to still getting back to 100% from the accident? And we know he was in the concussion protocol, I believe. So maybe there is some lingering sensitivities there. If he was still having, you know, concussion symptoms, I don't think he'd be playing. So I doubt it's like significant, but he didn't practice for a while. So maybe he's still kind of getting 100% into game shape. In this game in particular, it might just be that they had a better sense for what Kolar and likely could do in terms of the specific matchup. It was interesting to watch Likely, especially I think as a kind of almost a personal protector for Lamar on some of the zone plays where he was kind of a lead blocker.
Yep.
On some of the zone reads. And I think he was very effective in that. Maybe they like his ability in space a little bit more than what Andrews can offer. And maybe they like Kolar a little bit more as an inline blocker than what Andrews can offer. So they just felt like they were better matchups in this game. I still think Andrews is probably the best pure option as a pass catcher in terms of his ability to actually get open and, you know, make contested catches and I think stretch the field a little bit. That's more what he's shown as a pass catcher than what I think even Likely has shown. Not that Likely can't do some of those things as well. He's a very good player in his own right as a pass catcher, but they haven't really used him and targeted him in that way. I mean, I think there was a lot of discourse about the week one game where he was kind of getting doubled and bracketed a lot, and he didn't get many targets because the Chiefs were taking him away, so Likely feasted. I don't know if that's something that we're going to continue to see, if it's going to be a matchup type thing, or if it's really we're seeing kind of a changing of the guard there. That's the real question, I think.
Yeah, I'm not there yet in terms of changing the guard. I think Likely and Andrews will end up with a similar percentage of snaps for the year. I think that we'll see that. But I think you nailed it in terms of the situational blocking that you get from Kolar. And they got a good, you know, they got a good receiving game from Kolar too. They got a very big play out of Charlie Kolar. And then the downfield blocking out of Likely has been just off the charts.
Yep.
Impressive. You know, he's making one huge block per game where you just, even if you're not a fan of offensive line play, you can't help, you can't miss it. It's right in front of you, you know? So very impressed with that. No. Let's see. If there's anything else I want to hit on before we go to break here. I'll leave it to you. Anything else you wanted to hit on scheme wise before we move on?
No, I think, you know, the one thing I think, I mentioned it a little bit in terms of scheme. I was very happy with the way Todd Monken utilized personnel and formations in this game. I looked at the numbers, at least according to Pro Football Focus. He had 6 play action attempts in this game, which is not a huge number, but considering they only dropped back to throw it, I think, 16 times, that's a pretty good percentage of them. Last week, I think it was about 12%, according to PFF. And the first week was probably around 20%. So a little bit of a tick up in the play action. I think a little bit more under center for Lamar. I like that. I think it gives the offense a little bit more, I mentioned, use this word before, dynamism. It gives, you know, a little bit more for the opponent to think about. Just seeing some different looks in the way they were lining up in the backfield. You had some sidecar. You had some... You had some pistol. Thank you. Standard shotgun. I think that is going to keep defenses a little bit off kilter. And if you can do that from different personnel packages and have different formations with how you're lining up your tight ends and your wide receivers, it just makes it harder to defend. And I think they did a great job of pushing those buttons in this game.
Yeah, they do a really good job of, and this is true of most NFL teams at this point, but it's not true of 100%, of shifting the side of sidecar in order to get clues from the defense. So, by the way, that's why they do that. It's not, they want to show the defense a different look to start, but the primary reason to do that, because the defense can move as much as they want pre-snap, is to move that running back from the left to the right or vice versa in order to see how the defense reacts to that, because it gives a clue over whether it's, you know, a man or zone concept and what they're trying to accomplish. So I think Lamar has become more adept at using that. And it's also an important reason why you need to get the line of scrimmage more quickly, is you need to have 5 seconds for that exchange of information to unfold so that Lamar can go ahead and use it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the best things that Todd Monken has done in the offense, is to empower Lamar to kind of take over that more so, call his protections, analyze what the defense is doing, and get into the right play. And I think that's something that he's done pretty well in the year and change that we've seen under Monken. I think that's a big growth that we've seen from Lamar Jackson. It's helped him elevate his play at the quarterback to the next level.
All right, Gabe, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online or look at any other projects you may be involved in right now.
Right now it's just kind of the standard Twitter forum that I like to use, especially, game day. I'm kind of live tweeting throughout the game, talking about what I'm seeing, good things, bad things. I definitely have opinions on pretty much everything I'm watching. So yeah, Twitter, my handle is @GabeFergie, and definitely feel free to reach out and, ask questions or just have a conversation. And I love talking anything Ravens football.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, always love to hear you promote the show if you can. If you're listening at this point, at the end of a long episode like this, we know you're a fan. Please take it to somebody else you know. I always say anybody in the office would be great, but also any older gentleman you might know who's a big football fan would like to hear analytics like this and our analysis like this, I should say. And oftentimes showing them not necessarily how to download a podcast, but how to get to it directly on the website is something that they could be more comfortable with. I know that's true of me, so I'd start with that. But thank you very much anyway for listening and being so loyal. Gabe, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken. Always fun to talk, especially after a win.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.